everyone, and welcome to another episode of Art and Labor. We're the podcast about the ongoing struggle to survive as an art or cultural worker. I'm OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. And you know what? Sometimes the struggle means that we talk about the news instead of talking just about art. And we gave you guys a little bit of art, and now we're going to give you some more news. So buckle up, guys.
Well, the thing is, like, I'm not, like, an art or cultural worker. I didn't survive. I didn't hack it.
I am. and it's easy for me to be overridden by the world, you know. That's kind of the way that art functions. It's like, you bring it in, you take it out.
It's the first to get cut. It's the first to go.
Yeah, especially when there's just so much going on. You know, is there art news? Sure. There's tons of art news.
There's a lot of, you know, Me Too's happening that I just avoid because I've been through that ringer before and I do not like it. Does not.
It's very traumatizing to participate in the Me Too discourse. I mean, I appreciate that there's a public space for people to get some kind of backing to speak truth to powerful rapists.
You just get stuck in either the constant, like, social media inundation, or you get into the grind of the legal system, and both are just extremely, like, overwhelming, fucked up.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Who wants? I mean, I just want to spend my life not dealing with the legal system, which means, you know, laying low, ignoring things, finding other ways to get justice, like getting a dog to poop in a bag and leaving it on a doorstep.
Not a bad one. Yeah. Doesn't. Yeah. It often not enough justice, but really it's like.
No, I mean, it depends on how many times you do it, though.
Okay. Like, yeah, it stacks.
Yeah. Like, what if it's like, do I want to go and be in court for the next 5 years trying to get this guy and drain my finances? Or do I just want to walk my dog by the guy's house, drop the poop every time?
I guess it's not bad.
They don't know why it's happening, but it's kind of just, it adds to a general sense that the world doesn't like them.
Oh, I wish they would fucking die. Parody in a video game. People's tribunal fantasy in my dreams.
Domestic abusers and international abusers. All
of them.
They could just kind of fall over gently and end themselves.
Oh God! Yeah, like in a Death Note.
Like, yes.
All their names.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what if we did like feminist Death Note, where it's like a woman gets it this time, and it's not like a woman who's obsessed with a man, like the original Death Note.
Yeah, no. What if it's like Lady Snowblood?
Yeah,
yeah. Lady Snowblood meets Death Note, and like, all y'all better watch it. If you screwed up somewhere, she's coming. She's writing your name down.
He's so fucking good.
Yeah.
If a small communist group got a hold of a Death Note.
Oh.
like a rando Trotskyist like org or like magazine like gets all of them.
Oh, dude. And then they just turn into like tyrannical figures because they have too much ideology backing them.
Yeah, but I would totally read that.
Yeah. No, I want to see it all play out.
That would rock.
Sorry. Yeah, so everybody who makes comics, here, have some free ideas.
Yeah, that's like my other comics idea was about a girl and her parents, and they live in like a super red state, and like the girl is like a kind of like disaffected Zoomer, and her parents are MAGA chuds, and
crazy! It's like the Odd Couple.
No, it's just like,
guys, how are they going to get through this?
No. But then what happens is they all get COVID.
Oh my god!
And the parents die, and the daughter survives. And then she survives with like the help of like a nurse friend of hers. And then she starts to join like the nurses, like union solidarity actions, and gets more radicalized. And then she later uncovers her dead parents' arsenal. Things go for a turn there.
So then it's like they uncover the arsenal, and she like starts arming all the nurses, and then they're like warriors who can also heal. They're like all paladins.
This is all extremely comic book. Like, yeah, just total. Well,
it's making me think of like the Last Man comics, where it's like, oh, there's the disease and it's taking out people, but it's affecting them politically, and like everyone's gonna learn something about their identity and what it means to be a collective.
I definitely read all of those when I was younger, and I read all of The Boys and all of Preacher, so yeah. I think it's pulling from all that shit.
Yeah, sure. I'm getting strong vibes of like the magical realism and the kind of like, oh, well, it's things you understand, but what if they went like this?
Yeah. It's just like stupid, like fantasy, like exploitation fantasies type shit, or whatever genre is called.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like all of that stuff kind of operates under the assumption that like there's no crushing state apparatus that would just like take out a nurse's battalion in like 2 seconds.
Well, maybe that could be part of it.
Well, it could be part of it. I mean, yeah, it's like then you gotta, that would be awesome, because then you're actually gaming out like how to get through a situation.
I think that's mostly what my mind wants to do, is game out like, what if this happened? And often, often when I game those things out in my head, it's the cops come with a tank.
Exactly. So it's like, because it's usually, you know, that's the checkmate there. But if you can figure out if there's like maybe an extra part of the chessboard that you didn't see like underneath the tank. I don't know. Yeah.
Or it's just like, something.
They could get really good at digging tunnels.
Right. Yeah. That's like, that's a thing you can pull from like actual, like conflicts like in Vietnam, or like when small time farmers fought back against the new United States imperialist state. It's happened before.
No, totally. And I mean, with all of this knowledge,
like a lot of people
of, like,
get crushed, but
explosive fertilizer. We're getting trade secrets here, dudes. The fertilizer, you can use it. It's pretty powerful.
Oh my god! Yeah, sorry to go on that fantastical tangent.
Oh, I love it. We could just keep going with this.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying to you before we recorded, I've just been in a sort of malaise zone. So having thoughts like that are actually helpful to me be able to have a little like hope, even if it's in my brain, or like have a little.
It just sounds kind of actually like the dreams that I've been having. It's funny because they're like, oh, you just are doing this while you're awake. Yeah. I've been having the dream where it's like, oh shit, things have really hit the fan now. I am exactly where I usually am in life, in my room, and I realize that the crackdown is occurring. And it's like, that's it. You're on a list because you're a leftist and you're screwed and they're coming for you, but you can be smart and you can survive. So how are you going to escape the city? And then I just go and I'm like, I'll pack two t-shirts and two pairs of shorts and my boots. And then I'm gonna bring my water bottle with a little filter in it. And then I'm going to find a way. I'm going to swim away from Brooklyn. And then I'm going to wash ashore. I'm going to run across the hills and I'm going to find people. And we're going to make a splinter cell.
Follow me, set me free. Yeah. Trust me and we will escape from the city.
Exactly. And it's just like, I kept like my brain
in my head the whole time.
Nice. Can we drop that in actually?
Yeah. I'll outro the podcast.
Yeah.
From the city. A beautiful song of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was saying that my tennis union did a march and a sleep in, and it feels good to do stuff like that in a way, because you're like showing all your neighbors like, look, here's this like big mob of people who will stand by you if you're facing eviction, which like you get a lot of people just like clapping on the sidelines and from their homes, and like there's an outdoor DJ by the park, and he saw our march and he was like, eviction free NYC into the microphone and stuff.
That's adorable.
And like it's nice to like to make that show to everybody in person that you're out there. But then you're just left feeling kind of like it's not enough for what's to come. It's not nearly enough. And
it's not. Well, I mean, I think it's supposed to just make you feel hope. And so, I mean, of course, hope has never helped us really with anything. But I mean, it makes you feel good, and feeling good can help you think about a solution instead of just falling into the depths of, impossible despair.
Yeah. And you ride on like we have had good wins that we fought for. Like there is this big tower called Avery Hall that we've been like organizing against, and they recently pulled out and cited like our opposition as one of the reasons. I mean, the cynic in me just thinks it's like, oh, it's because that there's a huge depression coming and like,
oh, it's here, baby,
projects. But like, it does feel nice to have stopped that project at least, because it was truly evil. But there's other things. It's just you're just left feeling like, you look at like the one thing that we're going to talk about is Governor Cuomo, right?
favorite guy
to talk about. Like,
I don't love talking about him, actually. I haven't even looked at him for like for a long, long time. I'm like, oops, I almost looked at him. Shoot. And I ignore him.
I mean, yeah, because it gets old, because like even in the very beginning of the pandemic, we were talking about all this shit that came true because of his fucking, because he's like a murderer and he's awful. And
yeah,
you feel insane about it when everybody was like super into him, and so we talked about it on the show for a while,
and guess what, he's still at it,
still fucking at it. I mean, so two things that came out today. One is like that 21% of the New York primary votes not valid, were invalid, and it's extremely fucked. I know we've mentioned it a couple times on the show, but like the thing is, like, it's setting a precedent for November to be such a huge shit show.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And we
know this is coming.
Yeah, and it's just awful. Like, and there's all this blame going around, and of course, like the Republicans and reactionaries are trying to pin it on the post office, but it's absolutely not the post office's fault. It's for the most part Governor Cuomo's fault. And that's like what has been missing in like the articles that I've seen about it lately is like that they just conveniently leave off Cuomo. He said like that all, like he put a deadline for when the ballots can be valid, and he didn't have to put that deadline. There was no reason for him to put that deadline because of all the delays and stuff. He could have been like, okay, we'll give them like another couple weeks, because it's not the voters' fault that
he just wanted to make a little hoop there, a little extra hoop, because that's the way our systems work. They're like, wait a minute. If we make it easy for people, then everyone's going to do it. Sorry, guys. All of these are bad because you did it at 12:01 instead of 12.
Yeah.
Done.
It's just so... so frustrating, like, because they'll find a way to pin it on the post office when really it's just the fucking governor who had total control over when the deadline was, and it's just pissing me off. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it just made me think of like, you know, when there was a trope of like the postal worker, like when everyone said, "Don't go postal, man." And it just makes me think, wow, if there was one sector, there's a couple of sectors. It's like healthcare workers and postal workers and, you know, all service really, but it's like the way that the post office gets squeezed for resources and the way that people treat the workers and just kind of the impossible task that they have of actually getting this convoluted, under-functioning system to work for the city. It's just, I don't know, I just, it's terrible.
It's so rude. Like, it's so fucking rude. And it's like, because they're like, people fucking love the fucking post office, and people know, like,
I love getting mail. I love getting good, fun mail, and it should be easy and it should be rewarding.
And the thing is, like, they reach all these areas that, like, nobody else, like capitalist enterprises don't, it's not cost effective for them to reach. So, like, if they gut the post office, like, all of these remote areas are fucked.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like.
Well, no, Amazon is going to pick up the post office. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. And they'll just keep doing it out of the goodness of their heart. Yeah. And, you know, not because of any like obligation to its, you know, to the public and citizens at all.
The goodness out of their controlling monopoly heart.
It's just fucking awful. And then the other Cuomo news is that, good news, everyone, New York's doing great and can totally give reopen schools in the fall.
Yeah, buddies. Oh, God. So the school thing, the school opening is an absolute insane move. I mean, like, you know, friends were talking about, like, out-of-state friends. Apparently, in some states, are having to rewrite their wills and or make sure they have a will so that they can go back to work in the school system. And this is like, I don't know if it's just something they're doing school by school, if it's just them.
Well, I did see that the Moore caucus here in New York did like a big action where they like did a big show of like writing, doing like a, like it was like a part of a protest. Like they all wrote their wills in front of like the governor's office or something like that.
Oh, that's a real. Yeah. I mean, that's a strong gesture. I think people are actually also just
have
doing
to do it.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. I think maybe they were trying to bring attention to that, but I don't know for sure, but it's probably all related because, like, some teacher, like, unions are winning really strong protections. Like, in Chicago, the schools won't be reopened least right away.
Did you see there was an article from The Atlantic that was going around, and it's from August 4th. It says, I'm a nurse in New York. Teachers should do their jobs just like
I hated that.
It's so insane. It's so insane.
The New York Times also found a doctor being like, I'm sending my kids to school.
Yeah. So there's this push in the news now to get these like salt of the earth essential workers to basically scab on any kind of like organized labor, and they're getting, you know, in this Atlantic article, they're getting this nurse to go like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm with a teacher and my husband, the teacher, you know, just has felt so useless during the whole pandemic. And I've been like, I didn't want to go, but I went and I'm working, and, you know, he is going to do the same because it's his duty. And, you know, he doesn't want to strike because it's like un-American.
Yeah. Teachers signed up to be around sick people all the time, just like nurses.
Yeah, exactly. It's because they've had the same training. No worries, guys.
Like, and they get the same protective gear. They get the same everything, right? Right,
dude. Everything is interchangeable. I mean, like, if a school just crumbles to the ground, you just put all the kids in a meatpacking facility. It's the same thing.
Oh my god. That is what they want. They like the stuff in the meatpacking facilities. It's literally like a grindhouse, like sending people to their death. Like,
I know.
It's so fucked.
Well, I mean, it's sort of an exaggeration from what's really happening, though, where the city is trying to find ways to restructure in-person learning to make kids go into unused retail spaces and like convert them into schools so you can change the size of classes and gatherings, etc. So there is like, it's like, oh, you guys, why don't we actually just bring the kids back into the factory and we can teach them how to use cool machines?
Oh, wow.
Like for 8 hours a day, every day. And we can get rid of the weekends too, because wouldn't 7 days of learning how to use machines be better than five?
Yeah, it's just, you know, if we crunch the nubbies, and it's just not practical to keep sending kids to these danged, useless humanities.
Yeah, because, you know, we're getting a lot of people writing, and not a lot of them are really adding to, like, advertising or, you know, just like the glory of the state in general.
Yeah, and or our corporate donor class.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. If only they would write, like, it could be like her, you know, if everybody wants to be creative, why don't you just do creative things as an industry, like write love letters for someone else?
Yeah, in the future, everyone will just like have a her because they can't leave their house. So everyone's gonna be needing to write individualized hers for everyone else, and like you become someone's lover, but only digitally and through a character.
Yeah, you didn't realize, but like her was also a documentary, and.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a few different documentaries that we're coming to realize actually they came to us from the future, but they describe different class positions. Like how Sorry to Bother You is a documentary. Mm-hmm. It's just a documentary from a different class, and we have a caste system set up now because
the people who still have to work on the floor and the people who are working from home. Both are workers, but are completely different tiers.
And they're so alienated that even the lighting in the movies are different because their worlds are lit differently.
They really are.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, it's all that white collar stuff. You got a real diffused multicolor system where you can like change the tone, and everything's kind of pink and lavender all the time just to keep you cool.
Yeah, I was just thinking about like the Sorry to Bother You documentary, which will be like all of the folks who are getting evicted will just be warehoused into like the worry-free facilities.
Yeah, exactly.
Housing. Yeah.
They're gonna like gut the city basically, because it's about half of residents that are going to be facing eviction. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, rents are going up. Like trying to negotiate anything with a landlord right now is insane because the property values are maintaining right now.
Psycho.
It's totally psycho. It's like, when is this thing going to actually, like, when are the effects going to be felt by the ruling class?
Yeah, they've done everything to insulate themselves as for as long as possible. So that was all of that, like, liquidity and the bailing out the mortgages and not the renters and shit like that. That'll keep that shit afloat for a while because there's no incentive. Like the place that we were basically kicked out of, they haven't filled it.
Right.
There's no incentive for them to fill it. It's probably a bigger incentive for them to mark it as a loss on their taxes instead of filling it.
Oh God.
And that'll be that way for at least the year. Right. And then maybe they'll have to do something, but I don't know. I don't know how that works exactly.
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
We've already been through this housing crisis thing, guys. It doesn't work.
Oh God. So they'll just sit empty. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You're right. Because like in the other foreclosure crisis of 2008, those houses just sat empty for a while, and then a lot of them are still empty now, but not all of them. God. Fuck this.
It's fun to think about. And it's like, it's this complicated issue of like allowing all of these mandates to be real because of the way that they're enforced, but they're also arbitrary that we could easily make a system that would support vastly more lives than this.
Seriously.
Easily. That's like, it's so frustrating. It's like, I've just been kind of, I don't know. I mean, I still participate in, you know, taking in media and hearing the conversation and everything, but it gets so, so tiring to know that we can see the answer, and we're all there. Like, the consciousness is high.
I know. That's what's bringing on a lot of my malaise too. I was like actually looking back on like things I said in early March, and I'm just like, shit, I'm just saying the same fucking shit.
Right. That's why I was like, I feel like I'm learning to live again a little bit, where I'm just going deeper into this, like, wow, I'm really like enjoying these different sparkling beverages I'm getting. And nice. I'm like getting into plants and stuff.
No, yeah, that is tight. Like that rocks. And like, I think that's what you gotta kind of get. Like, I've been getting a little like internal, but I feel guilty about it, and I gotta just not feel guilty about it. But I'm like exercising every day, which is something I don't normally do at all.
Oh my God, that rules.
It does really help me, and it does really help all of, like because I developed acid reflux during all this stress. I'd never had that before. And developed a bunch of anxiety, like problems with like panic attacks that I did not used to have. Exercise really does help. And even though I hate exercise, I like that it helps me not feel ill.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the jock of the pod.
Yes, you are.
Because I've been like, yeah, dude.
You lift weights and shit.
It's true. It is true. I do lift weights and I cycle.
Yeah, I got a bike this summer, so that's good. I was starting to get somewhere, but I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's great. Oh my God. I'm so happy that you're on this side now, because we can start, we can have an exercise corner where we talk about different ways to stay fit in quarantine.
I'm trying.
I know all these exercises you can do with pull and spring jugs.
Oh, wow. That's a good call. Yeah. Instead of buying what's it called? What's the little weight called?
Oh yeah, like barbells or like hand weights.
Yeah,
it
has a name. Kettlebell.
Yeah. Kettlebell. Oh man, I love kettlebell exercises though. They're so fun.
They seem like they'd be really good, but like kettlebells, of course, have become impossible to get now.
it's rough. They're so valuable because they're so convenient. But you can actually take two pull and spring jugs and do kettlebell exercises.
That's what I was thinking you were going with that. That sounds good. That sounds smart.
And then it's a little rough because it's like, you know, filling them with enough weight to make it so that the resistance stays strong and like keeps you, like if you want to build mass, it's a little difficult, but you can do enough reps to keep yourself in shape.
Yeah, which I'm not even there. Like, I can barely do 15 minutes of cardio every day because I'm like a nerd piece of shit.
Well, no, we're trading though, because you're lifting and doing cardio,
and
whatever.
You're watching anime.
Yes, it's we're becoming one.
The synthesis of this pod.
Yeah, it's great. We're gonna just like emerge more powerful and encourage everyone to, you know, to do some skill traits with your buds.
Yeah, I mean that is important during all this, like it is to keep in contact and with how you're coping. How are you coping? Like, what do you like to do when you're alone?
Yeah,
I like to watch anime. I like to work out. We should do both. Yeah,
and it's good. I feel like my finger is on the pulse. In One Piece. Okay, yeah, so
where are you at?
They're on the boat, which is a restaurant.
Oh, so you're at Sanji. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in the restaurant boat, and there's like this giant evil pirate that just he showed up on the scene.
Don Krieg, I think.
And like, and everyone is stuck on the restaurant boat, and he busts in, and his little like pirate helpers are like, "Please, my captain, he's gonna die." And everyone's like, "Let him die, man. Just let him die, cause he's a bad guy. He's a bad pirate. Don't give him food. He might get up and start being evil again." And then they give him food and he's evil again.
But it's the principle, you feed everyone, right? Was that it? I forget.
Yes. Yes, they did it. Yeah. And it's like, oh no, what do? You have to feed everybody. No death penalty allowed.
Yeah.
But it's so complicated then, because he just gets up and he's so evil.
Yeah. I wonder what's going to happen.
I know. Well, I think probably the good guys are going to make it out of this one, but
there are 800 episodes. Right?
Yeah. They're going to make it. I think I have my hopes, but you know, I'm nervous.
Oh man. I was thinking maybe we should screen something. I was thinking of screening some of the new Lupin movies that I haven't seen.
Dude, yeah, we should bring back Lupin Corner.
And watch the new ones. There's one that I haven't seen a bunch of them. There's one all about Jigen and one all about Goemon.
Amazing.
They both seem good.
Yeah.
Screen them.
And they're so mysterious, you know? It's like, what was their childhoods like?
Yeah, I wonder if that I'd get into that.
Yeah. How did they become themselves? Ooh. Time for an origin.
Origin story. Or that's what a movie is good for, is those origin story things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They went through the origin of Zoro in One Piece also, which I was like, oh, man. Jeez, that's weird. He was a kid, and he went to the dojo to learn how to be the best swordsman in the world. And then he was always beat by a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he never, ever, ever, ever beat the girl. She just had to die.
Yeah. She had to die, though, to cement his story or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell? And her dad, who ran the dojo, just sucked. Because he was like, no way, you can't be a swordsman, you're a girl. And it's like, but she's the best. You gotta just tell her she's the best. You're such a bad dad.
Yeah. But that's what I do like about One Piece. That, like, even though he draws women the way he does, like, the women characters aren't the worst. I mean, it sucks that she had to die, but who knows what happens with the rest of his origin story. There's still some loose ends, even to this day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very mysterious. Like, there, and then you see there's these bounty hunters that know Zoro too, and it's like, ooh, wow, you really got into it out there, huh?
Who knows? We'll see. Saying nothing,
guys. This show is so good. What the hell? I'm like the last person in the world to
no, start you're not it. Actually. People are getting into it in quarantine, especially awesome. Because like. The current arc that One Piece is on right now is so good that, like, I think, like, nerds keep, like, seeing One Piece nerds talk about it and are like, I guess I have time now.
Yeah. No, that's really it. This is what has happened. It's like, what else am I doing? Oh, yeah. I should enrich myself.
Yeah. The current arc is very, it's worth it. It's all worth your time because it's good, and like and even these early arcs like Nami's story is really, really good. I think that's next.
Ooh, it's great.
Super good. One of the best early arcs, I think.
Yeah, I want to know how she got to be a thief extraordinaire.
You'll see.
Awesome.
That's cool. Sorry, we totally went on.
Yeah. One Piece story. Yeah. So that's it. Thus concludes our One Piece segment.
Yeah, that's true. We gotta remember to do that every week now.
Yeah.
And How's Constructing the Reel too? That's our other recurring segment.
Oh yeah. So Constructing the Reel is going great. We just wrapped up our first text. So Art and Bear Life is like, when you go into the Discord and you go into the Art and Bear Life channel, there is recordings. There is links to subsequent materials. There is chat. There is a whole history of class right in there. And you can, like, go through the terms that we pulled out for you. You can start running your own group off of the group that we recorded and, like, you know, add your own takes to everything that we built. But yeah, it's exciting. So now we're kind of taking a little break, and we're going to have a guest, I think, on Monday come and talk to us about their work. So if you guys also are just like, you know, if you're an intellectual type who has spent their lives nerding out about something and you want to teach it, we are accepting lectures. You just have to write to artandlaborpodcast@gmail.com and let us know what your lecture is about. And, you know, please, no jerky stuff. You're not allowed to come and do a racist lecture. Sorry. We will not allow you in. But if you got something cool, it doesn't have to be theory based. It could just be, you know, whatever you've been extremely interested in. We're gonna have Kevin, I think, friend of the pod, do a paint mixing demo.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's cool.
Yeah, so he's going to teach us like how to make paint stuff from scratch because he's been like, you know, heavily studying and steeped in this world for a long time. So, you know, it doesn't have to just be theory. It can be a skill. It can be whatever.
Even that gets into theory. Ready-made in the tube of paint, baby. Like,
true. True that.
That's a whole thing.
Yeah, we got history in there.
Yeah, and the recordings are helpful. Like, I've still not been able to commit to, like, doing a class. But I like to follow along and just listen while I'm doing other stuff.
Oh yeah, dude, that's what it's there for. You know, the part of it is just like, you don't have to be the person who comes in and like does the heavy lifting. Part of the community is just like, it's there.
Yeah. And that's like, that's huge. I mean, I've always been that type. Like, I like listening to like podcasts about text that I don't quite understand. Like, I do that even before constructing the reel. It's always so helpful to me. So I love seeing this one because I don't think there's other podcasts really getting into this type of material right now.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I think I would like to continue on with the art and revolutionary track because like art and bear life has so much, to do with like, how we construct history and culture and then the mechanism we use to construct that thing
right.
being the focus of what we could, like how we could change our understanding. If that makes sense, it's like, it's not just like, what does history say and learning it, you know, beginning, middle, end, but like, what is beginning? What is middle?
What is constructing the real? What is constructing history?
Yeah, like why do we see certain art pieces as important? Oh, well, these like, you know, X, Y, and Z art pieces are important because they were made into history by the institution. Well, where did the institution come from?
Right. What gives it legitimacy? Is it white supremacy? It's probably white supremacy.
And here's the crazy thing. A lot of it was like this cracking open during the time that, you know, Marx was like writing Capital. It's all this like crazy stuff going on at the birth of the industrial age where everyone was like, hold on, how can I gain power by othering certain communities? Yeah. I can use this tool like called history.
It's true. And it, like, yeah, and we talked about that in terms of the Cold War, and it's not like that was a new phenomenon.
Exactly. And it's just sort of like, you know, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of weight to the way that mechanism is refined.
Yeah. What do you mean by weight?
I just think, you know, it's worth
getting into or something.
It's worth getting into, but it's almost like, you know, it's very heavy and they're like the implications of, the awareness that our like people in power have over the way that we manage history and narrative. Is that's fucking heavy. It's like, you know, it gives birth to the whole field also of conspiracy. When you start looking at like how history is developed and how culture maintains history and then how there's like a history of culture.
Right. I mean, we can even just look at it in terms of like who's on the boards of a lot of these institutions and who's like, you know, the administrators of these institutions, like, and what are their financial ties and what, like, yeah, it's like,
yeah, exactly. Kind of there's right like following, there's following the money, but then there's this weird thing of like, you know, all these kids are getting taught Robert Frost in school, yeah. Right. But it's because he was just friends with JFK. Was he a good poet or a bad poet?
You can see that now with the fucking Hamilton, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Shit. It's still fucking happening.
And then when you look at something like Hamilton, there's this weird revisionist history again, and a revision of the way that, like, you know, Black culture gets kind of sidelined in this weird, like, hippity hoppity musical. It's like, what? Colonizers are were hip hopping? What?
Backwards is forwards, and forwards is backwards. Did you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so pulling all that stuff apart is fucking heavy, and it leaves you kind of questioning what is real. Oh, I guess we get to rebuild it now.
I was just reading this morning about the theater consolidation. The Supreme Court, I think, is undoing antitrust laws from the 40s and 50s about Paramount Studio, which kind of set the tone for like how like Disney and the three other movie companies distribute films. And it's about to get a lot more consolidated, y'all.
Damn, dude. That's crazy, because it's like the history of like the movie moguls coming into their power has so much to do with like these mafia dudes like edging out a state-run cinema.
Yeah, well, it's about to basically be state-run cinema. Like I was also looking into the new front runner for BP. Is that Suzanne Rice? Is that her name?
Yeah,
Suzanne Rice did a she's like a Brookings Institute person.
Yeah. She's going to be the Biden.
Yeah.
The Biden to Biden, where Biden worked with her before. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
So they trust each other.
And then just, you know, like, where she worked? Wow. Do you know why they think that she's the front runner? It's because she worked for Netflix and she had to sell off 300K worth of stocks recently. So that's why they think that she's the pick.
Because
she's like cutting ties with Netflix, but it's like Netflix has all these ties with the Obamas, like doing like the Obamas have been like producing things for Netflix, and they're doing like a Michelle Obama documentary, and like
I know, yeah, they're doing that, and she's like doing all the Spotify podcast stuff too.
Yes,
and you guys, she has low grade depression because of quarantine. There's a huge spot about it. I don't know if you guys know.
I'm like, did you see my tweet where I was like, go paint pictures of dead soldiers about it? Piece of shit. I guess it all does tie together, because it's like, yeah, the Obamas have all these cultural ties with Netflix. And that's like that type of media distribution is only going to get more powerful under these quarantines. And it just, yeah, it feels almost like we have a state-run media, like almost, like, I don't know. Like if we're literally like,
I mean, it would be state-run if it wasn't already privately owned people who are just also running the state.
That's the thing. It's like the best of both worlds. No, it's
the worst of both.
It's the worst of both worlds. Yeah. And it's just neoliberalization of like of everything. Of the government is serving the corporate class more than the people. I mean, we know that like 87% of Democratic party members support Medicare for all. Does that mean they're gonna fucking do it? No. They serve a higher power than the people.
Yeah, sorry folks, in case you were wondering why politics feels so alienating, it's because it's not for you.
It's not for you. We've been over this.
Yeah, sorry, look, just like get in your lane.
And then culture's not for you either.
Yeah, except for the stuff you make yourself,
right?
So make it yourself, do it for you, and do it for your friends.
That's the thing. And yeah, And Yeah, I don't know. As far as like organizing goes, like I've been thinking about and reading about like history of organizing the unemployed. Because that's just going to be a lot of us for
I know. Oh God.
A while.
I'm so stuck in this weird space because the end of Art and Bear Life talks briefly about the kind of control mechanism of like public works programs and setting people to task in large numbers, and just like how kind of I don't know, it's like the issues of industrialization in that regard. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, it's the terror of having like a monoculture where everyone is unemployed and there's one or two things that you can do about
right.
it.
It's going to be Amazon or like, yeah, or what? Like, you know, you're either forced into like, yeah, into these like, I don't know, these extremely, like all encompassing, like, yeah, like, I don't know. They probably are going to like remake some types of factories, like with Amazon money or something.
Yeah. Well, they're starting now. They're trying out, like we talked about it on the pod, but it was like, all right, so we're going to do chemical manufacturing
right.
and
yeah.
expand that and just start, you know, just bitching around with China over it.
Right.
And then it's like, who knows where we could go from there?
Oh, seriously.
But there's like subsidized, I think there was like a subsidies for companies to hire programmers or something at a lower rate so that everyone can just be like, if you're unemployed, you just go into the coding factory and you just like grow Google.
Yeah, that's the ads I've been getting lately, is like, learn to code and you don't have to pay for your training until you get a job.
That's so crazy. Like, yeah. It just, that stuff reminds me of that, Solzhenitsyn book, In the First Circle, where there's a gulag that's just for physicists. And it's true, because they were working on weapons.
Right.
And it's like, if you had a problem working on, you know, the nuclear front, then you go to a regular work camp and you're just worked to death. So it's like, you do your math, you hand it in, and the alternative is like, you just suffer.
Right. God. Ah.
And it was real. It's real. It's all real.
I was reading about the history of my neighborhood, I was like, yeah, because there's like a factory zone that's just been like, you know, abandoned. It's just empty. And they put a mall next to it, and they named the mall after the factory. The mall is called Atlas Park, or you know, shops at Atlas Park or something. And like the factory zone was called Atlas Park. And I was like, well, what did they even make? What did they even used to make over here? And it turns out it was the fucking Manhattan Project.
Sick. That rocks so hard.
Curse. That on top of like the Jackie Robinson over here was like built on top of like literal hundreds of graves that they excavated.
Yeah, what what's gonna happen though? You know, you gotta move things along. The people, they're dead, they don't mind.
Oh
yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Speaking of explosions, I've been
what else were we gonna talk about?
Oh yeah. So I've been kind of trying to piece together the whole thing that's going on in Beirut, because, like the politics in Lebanon are so wildly out of control right now. It's like they're so right now it's like, of course, there's been a bomb blast and they're trying to figure out what's going on because it was so large. It's sort of like at best a case of absolute criminal negligence.
Right.
And at worst, there's actually an international kind of like conspiracy ring being uncovered here, where like there's this weird timing aspect to it. It's like on the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima.
Right. Yeah.
It was when this explosion went off.
I remember that coincide. That's just, it's so wild.
Yeah. It's super weird timing, but the timing isn't, it's not only that, it's like, this happened during the time, when the case was going to trial for, Hariri's assassination. So, Rafiq Hariri is the prime minister, was the prime minister of Lebanon. He's
dead now.
That's
right. That happened like a couple months ago.
Yeah. So he was assassinated in 2005.
Oh, okay. No, I'm thinking of something else then. There was like a one-off assassination that I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but they were, but basically they.
Oh no, I'm thinking of South Korea.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's something else. But yeah, so this case has been like open for 15 years, and they want, so basically this like tribunal was set up to like indict four members of Hezbollah.
Right.
And so now everyone is like, oh, Hezbollah is like to blame for this explosion. And the implications of that are so crazy we just don't know like what exactly is going on. Cause basically it's like, okay, so Hezbollah is like a Shia Islamist political party that came out of Lebanon and like has had just, of course, like a huge role in the Syrian civil war. And is like fighting against Israeli control. So now, and it's like, okay, so Israel is all pissed off about Hezbollah like constantly, and they're like, and it's like, oh, are they going to go in and do any aid for the situation? No, because they're afraid that it's going to go to Hezbollah. And that,
they're drumming up France. That's the thing I keep seeing is like France keeps trying to worm its way into influence.
And now Trump is in there too.
And it's
just this very like weird thing because we're seeing this aftermath of like what is uncovered by the explosion, where it's like, you know, Hezbollah came into existence in like 1983, I think, after like this weird moment with Reagan, because Reagan had like a Marine base there, and then like this coalition wanted to like attack it, I guess. And so I think it would have happened anyway, but Reagan like sent troops there. There was a big old fucking war, and right. It was like they've been warring through the 70s too. There was like, so it's just been like, it's been crazy war. And then it's been like spurred on because of the way that Israel has been treating the Palestinians. The Palestinians in the 70s went like down to Lebanon and then, or went over to Lebanon and then like, you know, started trying to like form new communities, I guess, and also trying to fight right. back Israel. And so there's like the tension there that just made a civil war happen. And then Reagan is like, oh, hey, it's been a few years. I'm going to send some Marines over. And then finally this coalition of like, you know, all different people from Syria and Lebanon and all, they're like, well, maybe we can form our own group and push back on these hegemonic forces. And now they're all, you know, of course, terrorists. like deemed labeled terrorist organizations.
It's just so awful. Just destabilizing these regions.
And it's just, and it's so deep and it's so long going and it's just like, and it's all tied in, of course, like with the Syrian civil war that's going on now. And like,
it's so deep. Like Joey's grandmother, was like 96 when she died, and her family of like seven were like Palestinian Lebanese and, had to flee during the civil war, and, they fled to Nicaragua. And since she was like raised in Nicaragua, Spanish is like her first language. Her That's dad wild. Spoke Arabic, and then eventually made it to New York City. But tons of her siblings just died during all these trips, and during like she was like the last surviving sibling of seven. Like her birth certificate got screwed up with her sisters who died.
Yeah, it's totally crazy because, you know, it's like that's the kind of experience of people like, and then, you know, it's that, and then there's also, you know, the way that in Lebanon, the other city, like Tripoli, has just been completely like war torn for years, just years and years and years. And it's also based on like city planning and like the way that they organize like their politics, because they have so many different factions. So it's like, you know, whatever, the president is a Christian, like the prime minister is like Sunni or whatever. Like they try to put one branch of each of their, you know,
to balance all the,
yeah, but it just, and then the way that they make cities there, it's like Tripoli has this strong religious divide, and it's all along this one road that's like Syria Boulevard or whatever. So it's like people just shoot at each other across this one street and just like decimate each other because of the city planning and because of the way the municipal powers are.
The way
are.
The West divided the borders up. Like,
yes.
Fucking France. And then France is trying to get back involved. And like,
oh my God.
If you look at the media about this shit, there's all these fucking fluff pieces about like the people of Lebanon actually want France to get back involved. And it's like, fucking who? This random ass petition? Fuck you.
And it's, yeah, I love it when they say, like, Beirut, it's the Paris of the area. And it's like, well,
it's
that's not
white.
A nice,
like,
it's
you.
Like, that's not a nice thing to say. I mean, there was a lot of colonialism that made it Paris.
God damn. It's like how, yeah, South Africa is actually the good Africa.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm dead. I just died. I just died.
Like, I'm going to kill these people in the Revolutionary Army when the world collapses.
Yeah, in your really good comic.
In my comic, in a video game parody.
Yes. Yes, it's, you guys, it's not real. It's okay. It's fine. It's just dreams. Don't come after us like the DHS did with Brace.
Oh, yeah. God, we didn't even touch on that. That's so just beyond. Like, that's like, that's the thing, you know, about really, you know, getting on a list. Like, that's getting on a list, baby.
Yeah, guys, there's lists and then there's lists. It goes deep. I can't believe it, though. Guys, yeah. Oof, podcasters getting in trouble with the Homeland Security.
But it's like, yeah, one of my takeaways from that is like the way the state, you know, the state doesn't give a shit if you're a communist or an anarchist. There's all this like infighting constantly on Twitter between the more anarchist American left and the more communist American left. It's totally meaningless because we're all in the fucking United States and we're all under like the same, like they're just going to group us all together. Like it's like,
you know. Yeah, they're going to group us all together and they're going to use terrible words that we thought that, like, we're like, God, don't, you know, we're gonna be like, don't dead name me, and they're gonna be like, we're gonna kill you,
we'll just kill you. It's
yeah, it's great, but you know, later for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the little tricklings that we're seeing from that leak, which is really cool that Ken Klippenstein got that leak.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll get more leaks like that before shit gets really insane, but.
Yeah, and then after having all these anxiety dreams, we'll all be able to figure out how to flee the city.
Yes, escape from the city. Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all right. That I'm going to play that out. Play that.
Yeah, take us out. Escape from the city.
I have like a meme I made about that. I'll post that.
Oh, beautiful. Let's have fun.
Let's have fun. Bye.